Happy Friday, everybody. My name's Indy, and the gentleman next to me is Jay Powell from Powell Group Consulting, and welcome to another amazing episode of Indie Game Business. And today we have Eliana Oikawa. She's the CEO at Wings and the COO at Game Habitat. The title for today's episode is Publishers versus Investors for Indie Game Developers, but there's so much more. There's so much more. So
yeah, we're not meeting that as a competition.
Mm-hmm. Not as a competition.
Oh, Eliana, welcome to the show. Let's start off with our favorite. Tell us how you originally got into the game industry and then walk us through your career up to this point.
Well, thank you. I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for the invite. Oof. Okay. So walking through the career, maybe there's a bit, a lot. Don't want to bother, get people bored or necessary. But I actually had a very diverse professional background. You know, I normally joke that I worked with so many different things in my life. Normally my partner and I, you know, time to time when talking, I even say, oh yeah, you know, I know about this because I've done this in the past when I was young. And he's like, what, that as well? Like, it's so many different things. But I think I can start by saying that, you know, I was born and grew up in Brazil, but I have like a Japanese family. So it's like in Brazil, it's kind of like, you know, sometimes, and also from Asian family, we start working like quite early. So I guess that's also justify like why I've done so many things. Like I work since, you know, actually I was a kid, like helping my parents' business, so family business. So I always did a lot of things. But I always liked games. You know, I played a lot of games from ever since I can remember, even though it actually wasn't very common for girls. You know, I didn't have many of my female friends playing games, but I always had a lot of male friends, and I also had like an older brother. So, you know, I grew up playing a lot of like Sega Master System, which I think in some countries they call like Sega 8-bit, and then Mega Drive, SNES, you know, like Sega Saturn, you know, PlayStation 1. So I played from like, even like being a teenager, played a lot of like arcade games, like fight games, played like competitively as well. So it's like I was studying like IT in secondary school. And I decided to go to like this, technical school, like for computer science, because I had that need to maybe start working straight away, just after finishing high school. And then with that, like I really enjoyed, of course, like computer science and science, everything, but I kind of naturally gravitated more in the jobs that I got straight away after high school into something more like operations and business. For some reason, I think I just naturally had some inclination to that. So even though I was hired to be maybe IT, I ended up getting involved more with like how the company was structured and, you know, like things that they were not running so efficiently, like what could be optimized in a more like still with kind of IT standpoint, but a little bit of business as well. And then I was actually, my career was really growing from there. But since I always liked games and I always liked art, you know, and culture in general, I just felt that I was going to, even though I really love what I was doing, I just felt I was going to an industry that I couldn't really feel that it truly belonged to, or, you know, that I could identify with the people that I was working with. So I decided like to shift, and then I went to university and I started studying like kind of a business for cultural production, which is called in Brazil. It's like, you said it to be like kind of project management or something like that before cultural project. So if there, I actually worked a lot with festivals, films, you know, exhibitions, projects with like heritage. I worked with a lot of like famous Brazilian artists. And then I really loved that, you know, I really loved doing that. And I got a little bit more of the taste of like working with creative minds. And also like technical minds. That was like this very good combination, you know, of working with people who were working with very abstract art, really all there, but as well, like people who are very like into the crafts, very like technical. But I still felt like this is not my crowd. I still feel there's not so much my community, but I build a career in there and got like big companies and like high positions, but then I still felt that there was something missing. And then I started thinking maybe I should study animation and, you know, do something else, start searching around. And then I saw that there was like the first ever course at university in Brazil that had games in the title. So it was something like a 3D graphic design for games and animation. And I was like, perfect. I'm going to study this now and change career again. But, you know, I was in Brazil, you know, and that's like, there was no games industry in Brazil at the time. You know, I left Brazil in 2009. So we talk about like that, like 2006, 2007, there was no games industry at all. You know, even animation industry was very non-existent at the time, especially in Rio de Janeiro where I was. So I studied that and, you know, no hope for future. Just like, who makes games? Nobody makes games. There's never going to be anything. I was like only me and another woman in the whole class. Everybody else was a man and everyone was going to architecture, you know, to do 3D assets for architecture. So I just felt like, okay, well, that's it. I won't work, I guess, for games industry. It's never going to happen. And I carry on working with just like, yeah, all the projects in art. But then I moved to London and lived there many years as well. And it's super hard to get in the industry there as well. So I completely give up. Until I came to Malmo for a conference where I live now in Sweden. And then, you know, I was just so fascinated with the city, you know, having a small city, but with so many game studios, as well as so many very cool startups. It's like coded to be like a version of a Silicon Valley in Sweden, right? So it's like, it's a super cool city and very approachable. Like I could just simply start talking, you know, to people who founded Arduino. And as well, like talk to the founder of Massive Entertainment, you know, Ubisoft Studio, just like that casual, you know, like eating cake in an event. So I just felt like I really need to move here. Like I really need to come to this city. And if I ever going to work in games, this is the place that I'm going to have a shot, you know. So then I did. I moved to Malmo and then it poked everyone in the games industry, every studio. And then I started working with a game Habitat that I'm CEO now. And I think from there, so everything spanned across, like from game Habitat, working there and working with so many great game studios and as well, like the developers, and then get to know other organizations. From there, I joined Wings as well afterwards, which now I'm the CEO. So, yeah.
See, it's never, this is why I love asking this question, because everybody's got like a different, you know, journey through here and how they got in it. But I do have to say, if I'm taking one thing out of that, the no hope for the future is a great, you know, method for the industry right now. If people are trying to get in, it's like, oh my God, this is absolutely, that's the mentality that we have to have all the time. And it's why I tell people, it's like, look, if you want to do this and you want this to be your real job, you better love it, because this is a absolutely brutal industry to be in. So tell us a little bit, and actually I want to talk about Game Habitat too in a minute, because it's another very interesting piece of the industry that we're growing, and I like to see that as well. But tell us a little bit about what Wings is.
Yeah, so well, at Wings, like we are actively working to change the games industry. So we have like this bigger mission. That we want to, you know, get more representation, make sure that there's more diverse games out there, and as well get more women working in the industry and support diverse creators that are now like trying to open a studio, try to, you know, to make through their career in games. So what we do, we like fund indie games by teams where women and other gender marginalized developers have key positions. And by key positions, we say creative roles, business, management. So roles that can actually impact on the decisions of both the studio, but ultimately like the game that's been made. So, I mean, the idea is that the teams should be diverse. So it's not only about having teams of only gender marginalized, it's just having a nice balance and a nice mix. And then with that, we also have a lot of other initiatives that we work with to just support the community as whole, to just amplify the voices of underrepresented developers as a whole. So as a core, we fund indie games with women and gender marginalized in key positions, But then on the side, we also run a lot of different projects and initiatives. Like we recently, last year, had the Elevate, which is it was an accelerator program that we run this last time, sponsored by Netflix. And then now, for instance, we are doing the Women's Day sale on Steam, so second year. So it's ongoing until this Sunday. We also did the showcase, Games with Wings. We also like host Wings Spotlight Award. So we do a lot of things that are not directly connected with the developers that we are working with, like Sign, but actually like the community as a whole. So to also celebrate the talent that exists in the industry.
All right, so just to clarify, because we already had a question on Discord, it's not just women exclusive teams. It's teams that have women in leadership positions.
Exactly. And in everything that we do. So all these initiatives that I talked about, like be it the Accelerate, be even the Women's Day sale, everything is not about being teams only composed by women. It's just about looking at teams that have women also in leadership positions.
So tell us, walk through the difference between what you do with a fund and then a traditional investor.
So Wings is almost like a bit in between. So I think a lot of people approach us think that we are a publisher, but we're not a publisher. And then when you talk about investment, they might think there's like equity investment, you know, like VC or something like that. But we actually, like a publisher, we fund project-based. So we fund games. We're not investing in the companies or the studios. We invest in games. But you're not a publisher. So what we're doing, we are supporting developers to self-publish. Our ultimate goal is that these developers, they work to develop a sustainable studio and sustainable business. So the idea is that we help them to self-publish their game. So we fund the game. It's a full development funding, including marketing and everything. And then we support them throughout that journey to make sure that they have like higher chance of success. So we don't just like fund your game and then, you know, good luck, have fun. It's more like, it's like, no, yeah, take this. And, you know, the world is scary. But we support them in that journey. So we do provide a lot of services that go along the investment. So we work closely with them in terms of, you know, things that they need, be it business development, be it like platform relationships and, you know, network. One of the things that I think is also like it makes a lot of difference in Wings is that we also have the peer support. So all the developers that we sign, they work with, they're still very active in our Discord. They work still very close with them, like just providing support to existing portfolio. But then they help each other. Like they all talk about like, you know, have anyone have been through this, you know, have this ever happened to you? So they go through like technical things to marketing, to business. So they're still like actively helping each other. And it's like people who been through very similar experience because the teams are generally like, you know, have gone through some of the same experience for being as well, like diverse creators that maybe struggled to get fund before. But then we also do connect them with industry experts. So if you're needing, if you have some questions or need some support, then we also connect. We do our own kind of masterclasses and toolkits, run similar things that actually in the game business do with the community, but then we do internally with the developers that we sign. And also connect them to this like wider partners that we have, like trustworthy partners that can help them with specific things. Since they are self-publishing, you know, they might be looking for help with the QA or like PR or things like that. So localization. So then we also connect to Wings partners that can help them with those services. So I think it's that kind of a mix. Like we don't do ourselves the marketing like maybe a publisher would do. We help the developers to do that. And there, of course, it varies. Some teams, you know, they already have a lot of experience in self-publishing and then, they kind of know what they're doing. It's more perhaps for some advice, for like soundboarding, you know, or for like contact. And some others are maybe the first time that they're self-publishing, or maybe it's even the first game that they're working. So then we meet more regularly to see what kind of help they need. Is there anything blocking right now? What is like your biggest issues right now? But we're still kind of hands off. Like we're not, in a sense, like we don't have any control of, in a sense, what they're doing. They still hold all the control business-wise and creative-wise. Like we don't interfere if what they want to do. It's more like we might provide suggestions and advice, but it's up to them to ultimately to make a decision of what they want to do.
The having that Discord like you all have, and you know, like the one that we have, is so, I think, I don't want to say underappreciated, underrated, because it is a wonderful place to bounce stuff off of. I mean, it is probably in my 25 years of doing this, our Discord community is probably the thing I am the most proud of. And the first time somebody asked a question and then someone else from the community answered it, and I didn't have to, I was like, oh my God, we've actually got a community. And to be able to have that place where peers can reach out is like, you're the perfect example. Has this ever happened to you? And that is a fantastic tool to have access to, because you know, I tell people that come to our Discord for the first time, it's like, if you have a question, no matter how dumb you may think it is, ask it, because it's not. And I guarantee you other people have the same question. They're just afraid to ask. So yes, that is absolutely fantastic. And I want to do more stuff with you all as well, because I've already cheated and used your deck gallery in the past to run conference sessions before.
Oh, great. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I actually forgot to say, as well, I should probably add, though. So apart from the peer support that we mean of like developers that we signed on the Wings, we also have like the wider network at Wings. So for instance, like one of the things that make us very different from maybe other publishers and investors as well, is that all the funding decisions are made by our selection committee. So it's not like me or like my team specifically from Wings that do. We work with a selection committee of only women who are very experienced developers in the industry, and they run their own studios. They ship their own successful games. So they are the ones that give the funding decisions and advice on the funding, but they're also part of the community. So they're also like developers, you know, and run the studios. So when you have questions from the community, it's also not only the team at Wings and the developers that we're working with, but then also the selection committee of a very experienced developers. So that also makes a lot of difference. And the fact that the selection committee is only made of gender marginalized developers as well, we do feel that is also makes a lot of difference from when the diverse team is pitching to us, that you know that their game is actually being revealed by a selection committee of also gender marginalized developers.
That's fantastic. All right, so we've already got good questions coming in. From Discord, is there anything in specific other than the demographic that Wings looks for?
We actually don't look at demographic. So then again, I think there are various spectrums of like diversity, right? And this is one of the things that normally when you get application, I know this will be hard like for people to understand. Because there are, of course, a lot of, when you talk about marginalized developers, then you can have a lot of different groups. You know, it could be, you know, your where you are based. As I said, demographic, it could be a neurodiversity. It could be, you know, like racial, ethnicity. But with Wings, we are currently only focusing gender diversity. So it's really like just women and other gender marginalized developers. So, but we receive application from everywhere in the world. Like, it doesn't really matter. Like, Wings, we work all remote, even the team. So, I am based in Sweden, but my colleagues, like, are in North America, other places in Europe. So, we always spread out and we work globally. So, we work with teams like from many different countries, from Malaysia, from like, yeah, Asia. Like, it doesn't really matter where you're applying from. We don't have that. So the only criteria is that the teams must be composed with women and gender marginalized developers in key positions. So positions that will impact in the game and in the business, but as well that they ultimately will benefit from the success of the game. So that of course makes a difference if you, for instance, are a small studio and you might be working for a lot of women, but they are like all contractors, you know, and maybe they're making the sound or writing or, you know, voice acting. But then they get a salary, they get a fixed fee, and they get paid for their work. But if the game does well, they're actually not getting their revenue, right? So we are looking for teams where the women and gender marginalized, they are core team and ideally co-founders as well, so that they would benefit from the success.
So, but there's no like platform requirement or genre or anything along those lines?
Yes, sure. Sorry. Yeah. So for platform, like currently we're focusing on PC and consoles, funding.
Next one up. So the investment from your company is similar to a loan. What type of returns do you look for?
Let me read it. So the investment from your company is similar to a loan. What type of return? No, it's not similar to a loan. So it's quite different than some as well, like grants or things like that. So in that sense, in the business model, it's very similar to a publisher. So we do the full funding and then we pay out through milestones-based payments, which are decided by the developers, we have a revenue. Yeah, sure.
And then so Amanda asked from YouTube, do you all also invest in game events or studios, or just is it all project based?
It's only project based. Yeah, so no game events and no game studios. We only invest in game projects. We do support events though. So as I said, we have these other initiatives that we do for the community as a whole. So for instance, the Women's Day sale, we do ourselves, but of course with collaboration with other women in the industry. And then like the showcase as well, we've worked with the people, but then as part of this big celebration that we wanted to do for this whole month and especially kicking off this week, we are supporting all the initiatives that like women-led games, Games for Games. So we collaborate with other like event organizers or other organizations with similar mission to us. So either sponsoring or just providing, featuring them or providing other types of support. So in that sense, we do.
So we're going to get into a bit of a hornet's nest here. What are you seeing right now in the world of investments for the industry, the current climate, so to speak, for investments and publishing and funds in general for developers?
Yeah, well, I guess, we all know it's not a great year for that. It hasn't been. It's very slow in a sense. And that it's just a lot more scrutiny. It's like you have investment. It's not it stopped completely, but it's just that I think that it's just more a due diligence and like more checking, and there's just more like risk averse among investors and publishers. So I think it's just as a consequence, of course, of everything that happened, like you know, crisis and COVID and higher interest rates and so on. It just end up creating this macro economy that we are seeing right now. And I think it's been tough, I think, for indies and even up to AAA to seek investment now. It's been also more delayed. So I think what also hurts indies the most as well, because of they might not have a long runaway. So maybe in the past you could, you know, get a deal like with just 3 months or something like that, a conversation with a publisher, and now it can really go like to 6 months or even more. And then, you know, maybe you also required to show more than just, you know, a great pitch and a prototype. So maybe the requisite's a little bit more. Maybe you want to see more, like, are you already engaging with a community? You already have a community. You already have, you know, many wish lists. It's like almost like you expect that you, if you have done more work before when you're reaching out, it just make it easier because then you already, like, have some more validation. But then, of course, that's very hard for indies because they might not have a budget to go that far, you know, to have a Polish vertical slice and to have already been working with marketing. So maybe you're a small team that want to go for a publisher specifically because you want to help, you know, reach your niche audience or, you know, do the marketing. But now, out of a sudden, you are more expected in that sense. And I think on the wing side, what we see more is that since this is a situation that is being hard for everyone, they, of course, it's just even can hurt even more marginalized developers as a whole, not only gender marginalized, but marginalized as a whole, because we also have to think about that some countries, they still have a lot of grants and public funds, but in some other countries, developers just don't have the same opportunities, you know, as in other parts of the world, and they maybe will rely even more in publishers and investors. And now, since there is less money floating around, then it's a bit like people say, oh, you just have to hold this year and then, you know, next year is going to get better. But maybe those developers, they're not going to be able to hold this year, right? So that is just a risk of, there's a risk of some companies actually not being able to, you know, to finish the game, not be able to keep the studio or so on. So it's a bit tough. And again, it depends a lot from where you are located. And where also you're looking for, like what type of game you're making and what kind of a funding you're looking for.
So when you all are looking at a game that's going to self-publish, you know, because this has to be in every developer's mind right now, because it is much harder to get publishment. And even if you get an investor, you're still probably going to need a publisher. But what are some of the key things that you teach them to plan for if they're going to end up self-publishing, you know, their game that you all have been involved in?
For sure, like for when we are reviewing the games, we definitely check for that. Like, can this team self-publish? What kind of help they're going to be needing for that? And do they also understand what self-publishing means? But then once we are working already with them, as I said, we do a bit more than just the investment and the funding the games. So we do that. We're not a publisher, but we do provide a lot of support. So we have people in the team, and we have like a specific business developer that can help them with like a strategy if it's needed. And then we also, of course, keep working for our portfolio to try to get some deals, you know, platform deals or like some other kind of collaboration and deals for them. But generally, it's a conversation. As I said, some developers... developers that we work with, it varies a lot in the experience. So, you know, we might have very experienced developers from AAA, but then they decide to go indie. So, you know, they might be very good at knowing how to make games and so on, and how to maybe even run a company, but they don't necessarily know how to sell the game. And then you have some others that, you know, maybe even though it's early, they do have that skills already. And then, like, they're super into entrepreneurial, they're super good at marketing, they're super good at talking about the game, they're super good at multitasking, you know, doing a lot of things at the same time. And sometimes you see that even if just like one person, like an indie, solo indie devs, which is fascinating and incredible. So then it depends. So it's more like a conversation. We normally like start talking to them. So it's like, what are your plans for like marketing? And sometimes even when the developer is planning their milestones, we also check that if the milestones actually make sense. I mean, are you just separating, you know, the money, you know, in a calendar, or actually you separating, thinking about the features that, you know, that perhaps you should be focusing more, you know, the things that you should be working more now. So we give feedback, but as I said, we don't stipulate for them, but it's more like we talk and give feedback and then try to understand more like what is ultimately that they want to do and how, you know, we understand that the developers as well are the ones that know the most about the audience and the community. So it's more like a conversation to see, okay, so where do you want to go? And then maybe we can help, like, okay, so maybe these are steps that you can take. So we don't give a whole plan. We more like try to help them themselves make the plan and the strategies.
So question from Discord as well. As a developer, what should I prepare in order to pitch and show my game to investors and publishers, mainly looking for what is valued the most to make sure I'm well equipped to start contracting some publishers and that I'm ready to start pitching?
Yeah, I guess there could be a little bit different. Like before Wings, I guess, yeah, it's all the same. Like you want to have, yeah, you want to have like a pitch deck. You want to have like your budget. And it depends, like for Wings, for instance, the budget, we would want you to include QA, localization, porting, marketing. When in a publisher, when you pitch into a publisher, then you don't have to have that. So it's also, it shows a bit understanding when you adapt your pitch and your budget. It's actually fun to talk about that because sometimes you can see the developer made the pitch and a budget maybe thinking of, you know, to pitch specific to somebody, but then they just send the same like across to like everyone. And then maybe without checking. So we get a lot of pitches and budgets that you can see it was made for a publisher. So it's also good to really thinking of who you are talking to. And sure, you can have your template and the basic information, but try to adapt and really like know who you're talking to as well and really think about why you're talking to them and what they could help you with specifically. But then, as I said, some are still probably going to be okay just to have a prototype and check. And then, you know, it's like maybe it's a solid, you have a solid prototype there that's already showing, you know, like what the game, the potential of the game. And then, you know, you have like already a gameplay loop, like crawl loop already established there. You have a very strong thing going on depending on actually what the type of game you're doing. Your like key selling points are all there. And that could be fine. But some of my like, okay, this is interesting, and then gonna keep talking. And that's the sad thing that's been happening now is a bit like the stalling conversation, because again, they might wanna have more guarantees. And that's all because what you have to think about it is that publishers, investors, everyone right now, they're just trying to minimize their risks the most because of the current situation that we are. So when you go pitching to anyone, I think you really need to understand that. Like maybe what can you do to ensure that they feel like that their risks are being minimized. So like, have you checked the competition, you know, made the market analysis? How do you understand your target audience? Again, some publishers before, they actually prefer you not having a start marketing, you know, not having a Steam page or anything. But now, like, if you just start a Steam page and don't work on it, then it's not going to be useful for sure. But, you know, but if you being part of events, you know, maybe you got featured in one showcase, or maybe you run a Kickstarter and things like that, and then you want to draw the traffic somewhere, right? So then maybe you should have a Steam page so you can collect some wish lists. So then that also helps, you know, when you go like, okay, I have the amount already of wish lists, I have the amount of followers. They also already help investors and publishers to kind of feel the risk, you know, the projects like, okay, so there's already people excited about that. You know, there's already an audience, and then they understand they're already doing the right things. So yeah, I think it's kind of depends again. Like sometimes if you have a very solid project and maybe just a pitch and a prototype, you might get it. But the more things you can actually add to it, I think it's the better. Otherwise, as well, you might just end up in this very long conversation where publishers might keep asking you things, and that I think is a bit dangerous as well. Because it means that they see some potential for sure, but it doesn't mean that you are having a negotiation yet. Like you don't have a deal on the table. So then maybe if they go back and say, oh, but then, you know, you should polish more days, and then maybe they go back with feedback, but it doesn't mean that when you implement that feedback, that you have an agreement, right? So you also have to really think about your current situation and your budget and your team, you know, your runaway, because maybe you're going to be like doing all these changes and it's still after like 9 months in that conversation, not get it signed. And in order to comply with the feedback that you might be getting from a publisher, you might be focusing in things that in the pipeline, it doesn't really make sense on your own production pipeline, right? I'd be focusing some features that you would polish afterwards and not now. So, yeah, I think I would just say there's something to watch out for and be careful when you're like talking out to publishers, investors in general.
I mean, we talk a lot about the atmosphere is much more competitive now, but when what that actually means is you have to bring your best A game, whether it's the demo or the deck or whatever else, because mediocre, good, not great projects aren't getting funded. They might have actually gotten funded 4 years ago.
Before,
but they're not now. And so, especially for folks that are working on your pitch deck, there are example pitch decks on the Wing site, in that resource section. Every Thursday, we have live pitch sessions or live pitch reviews here on the Discord. And one of those, Omar and I did in our last conference, you actually go on our YouTube page and see it. It's all that much more important to make sure that you have all of this stuff, you know, day one and as much detail as possible. Otherwise, you're going to get shunted over to the backup pile, and there's no coming out of the backup pile at this point in the industry.
Yeah, I think it's good. Like if you were unsure, yeah, I mean, if you can get help from community, like yeah, with the, for instance, places like that, the in-game business or some other people to maybe reveal things that you're working on if you're in doubt, because that can show a lot. Like if you go pitch to investor or publisher and then you can see like your budget is completely like, under or, you know, over scoped, you know, and then maybe you're as well, the timeline they present is really like, you know, that's, you know, either too long, like you're pitching now and saying, you know, it's an indie small game with, you know, small budget, but then you're like, you're going to release in end of 2026, you know, 2027, then it's a bit like, what, but, you know, so it's also like those kind of things, it raises too much red flags already. On the team experience, so it's like you just kind of want to make sure that your budget is right, and then you know there's all like your expectations are right and your sales expectations are also right, and I think as Jay said as well, and just go with the project that you believe in, and you know like make sure to show the things that you believe that makes a difference in what you're doing and how you are doing.
So we touched on one, and I was literally waiting on this question to come in. For new developers, for companies that have never had to do this before, what is the best way to go and start figuring out and estimating what your budget is?
You mean like the production budget?
Yes, development budget.
Development. I mean, luckily, there are a lot of resources out there. I think it's also a bit like tough maybe to talk about that, but luckily there are a lot of like templates and resources out there. I think Rami in his newsletter, what's the name, like Level Up, I forgot now. Yeah, Rami Smile, like he has a free newsletter as well. It's something about Level Up, not just, it just missed me. He time to time share some resources like that. And then I know that a lot of like folks online, you know, have even like full Notion pages of resources like that. But I mean, first of all, you kind of, it depends on the team, you know, like again, maybe you're an indie dev and then you like build, like you've been working on a full, you have like a day job, like, you know, you already are employed and you're just doing the game on the side. And then you might feel like, it's okay, I don't need a salary, you know, like maybe go to a publisher. And it worked a lot that before. I have many people very close to me that just went like, I have this game, I don't need any money for anything. Maybe I just need money to pay music. right? Because it's the only thing that I'm not doing, I'm doing everything else. And then, you know, a lot of publishers, of course, yeah, that's great. No risk. And it's a great game. You're going to sell millions. That's insane. But for Wings, for instance, we like to see, no matter what, even if I ended up and you have a salary, we want it to be sustainable. So we actually want to see you putting your salary and the salary that makes sense. So that is like, you know, market salary for yourself during the development. And then, of course, you want to see that you're paying the other people that you are working with as well. So it's not always about making the budget as low as possible, you know, and just say, okay, but then if I just ask this, it's more likely they're going to get it, you know, a contract. But it's not like that, because they're going to check, like, oh, how can you make this game under this budget? You know, like, that's not going to be a sustainable practice. So, of course, it depends. If you're working with a full team, then, yeah, you definitely need to start by putting that salary. And then you have to start figuring out what can you do yourself, like, what you actually, the competence that you have gathered and people they're working with, for how long they're going to be working. And as well, what else do you need? Like, are you going to need to pay your musicians? And then, you know, you can just start checking with people that provide the service a bit, the hour rate, you know, just get an estimate. It's not that we expect people to know everything, right? But I think the best way is just to actually, for service that you have no idea how much it costs, you know, like localization and so on, you can always just get a quote from, you know, you give estimates, like, oh, what is the estimate that you think text your game is going to have? And then you just get that quote, you know, per, yeah, like per character for the language that you think also makes sense for you to have on release, which doesn't need to be all. It's more like, well, unless you're targeting a specific audience, maybe in Brazil or maybe in Asia, then you might want to localize in those specific languages. So then you can get there as well and start putting in. But I think often there's no problem for you to just reach out to companies that provide those services and ask them for a quote. And then, you know, even if you just have a conversation, say, hey, I'm just like putting estimates for my budget and, you know, how much costs, that many hours of this and that. But yeah, I think it's more important that you figure out like what is in your team is doing and what other service you will be needing down the line. And try not to, like, I think I see a lot of applications as well where people, like, they you know, they are budgeting and they're budgeting platforms, you know, to port. And for some reason, they just put all platforms. I'm not sure if because it makes it seem more interesting. And maybe some people think, oh, it's more interesting for a publisher if I, you know, saying that I'm releasing everywhere. Mobile, you know, all consoles like Xbox and PlayStation and Switch. And, you know, it kind of, I have to think, you know, does it make sense as well? Like the game for all those platforms. And also, does it make sense to have all platforms like sync shape, like on release? You know, maybe it makes more sense to just release on PC first. And then if you get deals for the other ones, then you do the other ones. They also show some more like business awareness. Unless you work in a game, they're like, oh, this game is very strong. Like this genre and this type of game is very strong on Switch. So, of course, you want to maybe, you know, target that on release. And that's fine. But then you don't need to budget all the ports for all platforms. And you definitely don't need, I mean, we talk about indie games, right? You definitely don't need to budget all language on release either. It's things they can release in the basic language, the most common language first. And then you see, once you're working, you see that there is the game's doing well in some other locations. Like you can see on your Steam page, you know, what people are buying your game from. And then you might think, okay, that actually is worth to, you know, localize in there, you know, in German or like in another language that people, that your audience is growing. So yeah, I think it's just when you're doing the budgets, on top of knowing the rates, is also think what makes sense for your game. It's not like just putting everything there. It's what makes sense for your game and what makes sense for what exactly you're pitching there. Is it early access or is it like a full release? So, yeah.
For those of you who aren't on the Discord, we actually have a talk that Heather did a couple of weeks ago for our Global Game Jam series on how to do budgets. So that's a good place to start as well. Just go to our YouTube page, and it's called Mastering the Game, Creating a Budget and Schedule for Your Game. So there's an option as well. From Inspector Geek, this is a good one. What are the game genres that are buzzing around right now? And I'll add one to that. What are the genres that developers should avoid if they're looking for publishers right now?
I hear a lot about them, of genres to avoid. And I understand, and I know the publishers and investors talk about that. You know, this is always the thing of like puzzle platformer, you know, like visual novels or narrative games, couch co-op or things like that. I think a lot of people talk like that, but I personally don't like so much about like, you know, boxing like this. And then again, I guess all the publishers, they could have a different mentality, but like for Wings, we don't have like a genre specific portfolio, right? Like we actually want to fund games, you know, different types of games, you know. We just have that criteria of gender, but then when it comes to genre, we accept any genre. And then, you know, we don't judge like that. It just don't go straight, oh, it's a puzzle platform. I personally love puzzle platforms, which is like even worse because everyone talk about puzzle platform, but it's probably one of my favorite genres when I play indie games. So it's like, and we did fund loads of visual novels as well, for instance. So I think it really depends because, you know, there are definitely many games and those genres that did super well. So I don't think it's much about the genre, and I do understand that it might not be true for all publishers. You know, they might be more, how to say, like, yeah, more cautious with certain genres that you know, are known to have maybe more niche audience or to not do so well. But it thinks a lot more to the game that you're making, really. And because if you're making a game in that genre that people may buy, avoid, but it really stands out because you're offering something unique and different, I do think people would look, it would have the opposite effect because it would be like, okay, but that would really stand out in that genre. So I'm not sure if I'm into like telling people to avoid doing a genre that they really like, and especially if it's an audience that you really know and understand, and then trying to just to fit in this like super risk averse, you know, template of games, and make something that perhaps you're not super comfortable with or don't understand, or just doing like to fit in. I don't think it's normally a good thing because what we can see when we review games is that we can always see when it's genuine. We can always see when you're doing something from the right place and when you're actually making something just because it's like, you know, the buzzwords and because it's popular and you're just like maybe seeking to make money, quick money or something, which there's nothing wrong with them because might be that you need that to make your passion, you know, your actually ideal project. But it's just kind of, you can see it. And I think players can see it as well. When something is actually genuine and from the heart, from the right place, and when it's not.
It's, so we get this question now because I rather famously a few weeks ago rattled off four genres that I'm like, it's going to be next to impossible for you to find funding if you're looking for, if you're pitching one of these platforms, and now I get to ask about it like every 3 days. Visual novels. I want to touch on this. I have been saying for years, and visual novels is one of those categories that I rattled off the other week because it is very hard to find a publisher or an investor if you have a visual novel because they're just not taken seriously. And I don't get it. I think there is an absolute spot in the industry for a publisher to come in and properly manage and produce the ones that are already out there and promote them. But for whatever reason, it is like just a no zone for publishers and investors. If you send something and they look at it and it even looks like a visual novel, they're just like, no, we're not doing this. Where do you see that genre?
I mean, it can definitely happen because, of course, some publishers, they might be more specialized, you know, in audience or in a general, like some publishers are quite known to, some are very specific, right? Like really like, okay, adventure games. So, you know, and then it feels like, okay, maybe they even feel, why are you even pitching that to me? Like it's not our audience that we work with. It's not maybe something that we are working with right now. I think they could have the effect for sure, like depending on who you're talking to. So, I mean, it's definitely better to, if you're doing visual novel, to go for people who have worked with other visual novels as well, because it's a different audience as well. So, I mean, you want to make sure that you're talking to the right people. But it is definitely like, it's one of those genres that there is a lot of them. And I think the reason is because there are some, it's a good way for you to like do your first game, right? And especially like if you have like a story to tell, it's a good way to perhaps really focus like a narrative and have like simple, in a sense, like less complex, like programming skills. So there are a lot of softwares out there that can help you to make a visual novel like Renpy, for people who like starting and maybe are not really super into coding. And then maybe you want to do you just one person. So then it becomes a little bit more like easy for you to handle the work by yourself. So there's a lot of things that people just trying out and starting. And then it feels like there are loads of visual novels, but there is also a very strong community. Yeah. There's like also a lot of people who play visual novels in this side of the world, but also on the other side of the world. So there is like a very strong fan base. So it's the kind of thing that it is hard maybe to see many visual novels that did really well and that succeeded. But then depends on what you think about success, right? Like if you compare it to like making a lot of money, like Paul Ward, you know, that's a different thing. Like success can also be measured in a different way. Right? I normally say that if you manage to release the game, that's already like a huge success. Mm-hmm. You know, if you manage to actually put out that's already very successful. And then it depends on your expectations. Like, you know, were you really aiming to make millions of money? Then maybe you're going to feel frustrated. But if you feel like you told your story and you see the people playing and they understand what you're doing, they like the game, you know, that thing's already huge. And financially, if you manage to break even, that's a huge success as well, right? It's of course, if you want to make a lot of money, then that's a different thing. So you also need to make sure that you set with the right expectation. Like when you make a game, well, like what is your measurement of success? What you want to get from it? And like, why are you even making the game in the first place? But yeah, I would say the visual novel genre is like, I know that there's a lot of like, yeah, maybe stereotype and things around it, but there is a huge audience. And if you are in the audience, if you are in the community, if you understand, I think it still has a lot of potential because it's, I would say it's not even niche. I mean, there's a lot of people playing. It's just that it's a lot of them. So what it makes it hard is maybe stand out in the crowd, you know, like make sure that you can be discovered.
It's again, it's one of those things that I'm just like, I don't understand why we haven't had that niche publisher that pops up yet and says, this is what I'm going to focus on. Because like you said, there's a huge market. And I think it would work. But one of the things that, you know, Chris Sikowski mentioned a couple of weeks ago, and I want to get your take on it, is the targets that a lot of developers set. And what you're talking about, you know, what is your mode for success? Because yes, if you launch, I don't think a lot of developers appreciate how big of a deal that is, because so many games don't even get to that point. But mm-hmm. His comment was, there's so many developers out there aiming for that next multi-million dollar hit, when in reality, if your game only costs $200K to produce and you make $400K, that's a huge success. I mean, that's an absolutely viable business.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, like you basically double your investment, right? That's a huge success. I mean, normally, like if you break even, it's already a success, right? But if you manage to even double, it's definitely more success. And that's the thing, because I think we see a lot of, it's a lot of buzz and news and things about the games that are doing super well, right? Oh, you know, like this game, Lethal Company, which is a great game, by the way, but like, it's just one person and it was doing Roblox, and it's like, wow, the game's like fire, so it's, you know, making a lot of money and so on. And then you look at the game, it's like, oh, but it's kind of simple, I can make that. It is a good thing, because I think, you know, having those examples out there is always very inspiring. And I really like to inspire other people to feel, oh, then I can do that as well. I mean, I do know a lot of very successful indie developers that were working in the studio, working even in AAA, and it felt like that. Like they saw Indie Game the Movie, or they saw Hotline Miami success, or things like Lethal Company success now. And they feel like, okay, so you can actually do that with just one or two people. And, you know, I mean, case of Hotline Miami is quite crazy, because it was, I don't know, like 4 months or 6 months development. But then, you know, that gives that hope that, you know, other people can do it. And I think that's great. I love about that. But you need to set as our expectations, right? Like, you can't think that just because you can do it, that you're going to sell as much as them. I mean, it's like, and it doesn't mean that was easy either. It doesn't mean that these developers had an easy time. You know, they might be struggling quite a lot with mental health and with maintaining the success as well, and like just working with the community of players, especially when they get too passionate about the game, can of course cause some stress emotionally and mentally as well. So I think it's good to have the understanding that it's not easy. Just because it's doing super successful doesn't mean that it was an easy journey. And it doesn't mean that all the games are going to have the same success. So you just have to have the expectations right. And then again, it's just like, why are you making the game in the first place? I think if you're just doing for the money, it's a bit like, it's a bit hard. Maybe you really have to think about if this is the best way to make money and it's worth, because it's not that you can't make.
We all know the answer to that question.
You can make a lot of money, but you know, it doesn't come without some sacrifices, you know. So yeah. So it's just like you need to also be in the game for other reasons, you know, and then it's also like some people you struggle to work with other people, right? And then it's even more, like, maybe tougher, because they have to do things by themselves. Also because maybe they don't have the resources and money. But then it's also like good when you, like, if you can work with a team and you have people that you know, they're very skillful, you know, and then you get along. And then you can share the burden. It's normally like super good as well that you go for the journey together. So you have reasons to celebrate and reasons like to go for the tough parts together as well. That's always is a good thing. I even forgot how we start talking about it. I even forgot what was the question. I just went on like, now.
I just love story. The statement of, is this the best way to make money? And I'm like, no. It does rank slightly above donating plasma. I mean, they're and everything below that. But you have to do this because you love it. Because it will absolutely, it's a brutal, brutal industry. And it's God, no, it is not the easiest way to make money.
No, it's not.
So have you got a few more minutes? Because I got two more questions I want to get to.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so one from... I'm not even going to try. Is there a minimum number of Steam wish lists that someone ought to have before pitching if the game's already got an existing Steam page?
I would say, for instance, you just said Chris Zikovsky now, right? I mean, that what you mentioned before, it was something related to him that I completely forgot about the question. But he's great in that. Like, if you don't sign his... newsletters, how to market a game, I really recommend. And Chris has loads of these talks online as well. We've been working like currently with him as well in a lot of lectures, and it's been great that he goes all about that, right? All about discoverability, all about like seeing algorithm and ecosystem. I think it varies, because if you're saying about like, yeah, that is some margin that people look after, like perhaps a minimum amount of a wish list they should have before release, and that kind of been changing, you know, throughout the years. But before pitching, what you're going to see is that how long has your Steam page been online, right? It's not like, I guess, a fixed number. It's like, it depends on the context. So if it's like, as well, like previously was so much more on the wish list and have the wish list conversion, like they would look at wish list and they would do the maps and like, okay, this can convert in that many sales, you know, first week of release and first year of release. But now there's a lot to look at followers as well. I think followers, and that's sometimes being a kind of a better conversion, like that they could kind of stipulate better than the wish lists, because now it's become like, it always changed, but it feels the wish list now is, are not so reliable anymore as a measurement. But it depends on how long your Steam page been on. Like, you know, did you create that 2 years ago? And, you know, like, and you have super low, that would look bad. but it's something that you just created, then it's a different thing. And then have you been in some of events? Like maybe you had a Steam page that's been on for a long time and you did the Steam Next Fest, which probably would be wrong anyway if you're not releasing now. So if you did all that, there would be already like some bad feel that you also already missed opportunities and did something not great there. But then yeah, maybe you did like a Kickstarter campaign. You did things that should have drawn wish lists, right? And your Steam page were already, it was already online. And there would be a factor, like, what is that? Like, is it because people are not interested in the game, or maybe, you know, with something missing there? So I think that is not fixed now, but people would look at those different things. How many events you've been, what kind of actions or activities you did when your game was featured, and how long your Steam page has been on, and how many followers you have.
That how long is it? Because new wish lists are much more valuable than stagnant ones. And if you need any proof of that, just watch your own inbox. I get it every week. Somebody's like, something on your wish list is on sale. And I look at it and I'm like, what the hell is that? When did I even?
Yeah,
I don't even know what this is. But yet there's, like you said, there's not really a magic number. It's just, you know, one of those things where the more interest you have, followers, Discord, social media, all that kind of good stuff. All right. So last one, this is a good one because I get this a lot. Let's say there's a very original idea, but not the most technical for a solo dev. Does pitching an idea to publishers risk them stealing your idea?
No. Again, I can't answer to all. I mean, but no. I mean, publishers, they're not really interested to make the game themselves, right? So they of course, maybe there's some cases on the industry, but of big companies, you know, doing this to other games. But no, I don't think there's a problem. I think the problem there is that, I mean, anyone would ask, but like, how are you? So the problem there is not a stealing idea. The problem there is that if you're pitching your game to a publisher because you basically want to, you know, get the publishing deal, right? And you want to get the funding. And then if you showing something that, as you said, maybe it's a great idea and then has artistic value, but is really missing in the technical part, that's not going to favor you in the pitch anyway. So it's a bit like they would just ask you, but then like how you as maybe a solo artist, you know, plan then to finish the game. Or maybe you do know some technical part as well, but the way they put it felt like maybe not enough. Then it's more like you need to have the partner first, because even if you put in a budget that you're going to hire a programmer or, you know, like your people to help you realize that, it's you, if you don't already have, then it becomes like a question mark, because it's harder to know the competence and if they will be able to get the game actually in the quality that needs to be. So I think you would, especially now, you would probably want to nail that first, because then even in your, like if you get like a prototype, especially if it's a vertical slice, that's even worse. But if you get rid of a demo prototype that you can see that there are basic things technically missing, there's already a little bit of a red flag. Like you would think, yeah, like this team needs another maybe technical team. Maybe the technical team doesn't have enough experience to see the problems here. Or there is there, like, even if you're aware that you need to hire people, but then it's a bit like, okay, but then hire them first and make updated the demo and then apply to us again. So I think it's just not, yeah, it wouldn't help you to get an answer then.
Eliana, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all that insight, and two, for all you do at Wings. And it's a fantastic initiative. I've been following y'all for years, and I love what you're doing. Stuff you want to plug? You want to talk about the Women's Day sale? Anything else?
Yeah, I guess the thing about it. But yes, I mean, the Women's Day sale is going on still until the 10th. So, you know, go check out. There's, like, great games. I mean, we did in 2022 with, like, 200 titles, and it was a huge success. We saw, like, almost 300, like 200 and some percentage of increase in those developers' wish list and sales. And this year we doubled, like we have over 400 titles. And just on the first day, we could see like developers like sharing like a super big spike. So, I mean, we're quite excited for that. We're kind of expecting that they will, the developers going to have great results in their wish lists and sales as well. So if you are a team that would fit, you know, Wings criteria, just go to our website, wingsfund.me, and then you can apply. You can also contact us if you have any questions about the application process. You can ask questions, like more questions that you didn't manage to ask here, you can ask there. And then perhaps like maybe you didn't make for the Women's Day sale this time, but maybe next year. So also like keep an eye if you're interested to have your game there next year, or if you're interested in any of the other initiatives that we do, just keep up in our social channels.
Awesome. That's awesome. Awesome. So do you have a few extra minutes after the podcast to hang out in the Discord and answer some questions?
Maybe a little bit. Yeah.
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah. He's kind of an evening. Maybe. Yeah.
I've got it covered. I'll stick around. Don't worry about it, Eliana. I mean, I'll go through some of the other final questions that we've got there. But yeah, Dan.
Yes, sir. So, yeah, if you are not on our Discord, discord.gg/indiegamebusiness, Jay's going to be in the live podcast stage channel. We're not going to be streaming, but that chat will be open. So if you have any other questions in there, yeah, this was an amazing talk. Thank you so much, Eliana. And I posted in the chats, not in the Discord chat, though. I didn't post in there. Forget those guys. No. Our link tree, if you want all of our links, you can go to that. We've got Indie Game Business merch. Indie Game Business merch. We've got all kinds of stuff. No love for the Discord, Peb says. There's tons of love for the Discord. Also, check out our free classes. Make sure you're following us on all of these channels. But if you're not in our Discord, it's amazing. Discord.gg/indiegamebusiness. There's so much in there. You could spend days and days and days in there. Thank you so much, Eliana. We appreciate you so much.
Yeah, no, thanks so much for the invite. Yeah, this is fun.
All right. We're leaving.